Chapter 5. Springer. Arriving at Braintree Penitentiary. Chain-link fence topped by barbed wire first. Enclosing the place's many square kilometers of grounds. Its complex of buildings and everything else. The rooms underground that nobody saw. Boyo drove the car through. Electric motor humming gently. ID checked by the guards and the system's semi-AI security. Vehicle and occupant scanned. Top secret work went on at Braintree, which in itself was no secret. The convicts who ended up here had taken time off their sentences, or else got payouts to family. They signed waivers. Felons were one of the great renewable resources after all. There was money to be made. Opportunities to be had. Warner S. Thompson inspected a lot of prisons. He had interests in plenty of them, had lent his name to the lobbies that wanted to make sure they could be run as profitable businesses, not shackled with too much regulation. To the lobbies that wanted to sand down any bureaucratic burrs that might hinder getting criminals into the system, or that might shorten their stay unduly. All good sources of donation for men like Pat Grubb to collect. At the same time, all part of Thompson's plan. Part of the big thing the clever part of him had decided it wanted done. Most of the world didn't exist to Thompson, not really. Most of the people weren't real to him. Not from the moment when he'd released their hand and turned that smile of his somewhere else. But when he fixated on a thing. When he decided he wanted it. No other human being ever had his single-minded focus. He would gnaw through any barrier. All those tissue-thin walls of not how things are done, or have to wait your turn. There were exercise yards, cell blocks, admin buildings, a vehicle pound, all within the long and heavily patrolled circumference of that chain-link fence. There were the laboratories. You didn't find someone like Dr. Marco Falorian. Slightly disgraced, but undeniably brilliant neurotechnician, and set him up in a place like Braintree because you wanted to hire out your cons to crack rocks. And that, too, was not exactly a secret, though nobody really talked too loud about it either. Falorian and Braintree had aggressive lawyers, and the waivers the inmates signed were really very good, top-of-the-line models. And nobody said exactly what was done inside. But that was how the tech industry worked. A loose secret could lose a company $10 billion in a day. The reason for all the secrecy wasn't a secret. Thompson's pace had quickened as a succession of jumpy office staff tried to escort them to Falorian's office and ended up chasing after them. Carol watched her employer's back and tried to work out whether he was just keen to learn how things had progressed, or if he was mad about the little legal snarl-up that looked like it was developing. Or both, one after the other. And anyone's guess what would leap first from the man's mouth. Then they hit the big waiting room, and the place was filled with people, maybe 20 of them. 18 men, 2 women, almost all of them on the young side of middle age. They were Braintree's boffins, Carol identified. Falorian's hand-picked staff, grabbed fresh out of postdoc to come make dreams come true in the private prison sector. And they hadn't been on the schedule for today, and Thompson could react badly to surprises. For a moment she thought he would just buffalo on through them, shoulders and elbows scattering them like bowling pins. Or else he'd tell Boyo to get them out of here, and maybe the dog wouldn't be too gentle about how it happened. The whole stunt was a calculated risk by Falorian, an attempt to throw a switch in Thompson's head. And then it had worked, though she didn't see the moment the man's manner changed. But he was glad handing with the best of them, smiling, nodding, congratulating them on the good work they'd done so far. He posed with a couple of the more telegenic, and Carol saved images she'd send to the press office. No sense turning down anything that could be leveraged for good publicity. Then Falorian himself came out, and there were smiles all round, Thompson pumping his hand as the pair of them smiled for her headwear camera, the rest of the scientists taking their cue and sloping out. The good doctor ushered them into his office, where the walls were bright with proofs of his genius, testimonials from banks and futures investors, enthusing about the implants that came out of the work they did within these walls. Data storage and sifting, pattern recognition, semi-AI implants to augment the scope of the human intellect. Carol's eye slid over to the Mars one, because she didn't like it. The image was of three of the Martian engineers, even now out building the first major colony city on the Red Planet. Falorian had done their internal architecture, the data processing they'd all been fitted with, but it was their faces that made Carol cringe back. Colorless, small-eyed, large-nosed, flat-faced, as though people hadn't been happy until they'd made actual Martians to go live on Mars. Dr. Marco Falorian was almost a full head shorter than Thompson, his face youthful, hair flaxen. He wore round, gold-rimmed spectacles, lensless, pure affectation. He had the best eyes that science could give him. He was 79 years old and looked barely 30, save for the white suits he wore that were from an earlier age. She thought that 50 years ago, before she or Boyo were born, and before Thompson himself was into long trousers, the image of a suit like that had somehow hooked into young Falorian's head as the ultimate in sartorial chic, and he'd never updated his fashion since. He was smiling at Thompson, offering a chair, making a magician's show of turning on the electric baffles so that anything set within the walls would remain there. She felt the pressure in her headwear, the sudden disconnect from the wider world. Beside her, Boyo shifted uncomfortably. Falorian's smile, like a predatory bird circling overhead from the moment he came into sight, slid away from Thompson and touched her. Carol bore it stoically, fighting the panicky stutter inside her at the man's attention. She didn't like him. He wasn't just an annoyance like Grubb, a potential liability, an onerous burden she had to manage. She could feel her heart rate spike just being in the same room with him. His look to her, oh, so solicitous. Then Thompson slammed a fist on the man's expensive metal desk, sound like a gong being beaten, and Falorian's attention was ripped away from Carol, back to her employer.
What? Thompson demanded. The fuck?
Falorian's look right then told Carol there were maybe a dozen separate things this might be about, and he just didn't know which Thompson had found out about. She dearly wanted her boss to bring a little subterfuge right then. The more leverage against the good doctor, the better. But that wasn't how Thompson was going to go. That kind of fill-in-my-gaps was all very well for the interviews, but this was the private Thompson, the one who just charged and grappled and bit until he'd torn what he wanted out of the world. And maybe, just maybe, this time Carol would take a tiny shard of joy from Thompson laying into Falorian, because there was never a man more deserving of a slap unless it was... But she couldn't think that. Not through all the devotion she felt.
Tell them!
Thompson snarled. And Carol had been his PA long enough that the precise tone and spin of two angry words identified the problem. The Lassie woman, the crusading mom. Ruth Ann Lassie, Carol noted, and saw Falorian squirm just a little, a reaction no amount of self-perfecting surgery could keep out.
Mr. Thompson, sir, under no circumstances is that woman going to get in the way of what we're doing here.
Never one word where a dozen could be crammed.
I had our very experienced legal team go over that NDA with a fine-tooth comb. It's cast iron, Mr. Thompson, sir. Never you worry.
A little bird tells us, Carol said sweetly, that she's consulting Aslan Connor-Leica right about now. Florian shot her a venomous look, which she delighted in. The little bird was a top-flight inquiry agent hired at Carol's direction to keep track of the Lassie woman, because Thompson had said he didn't trust her, and Carol's job was to make his whims a reality. And part of what Thompson was meant his instincts were good.
So she sees a lawyer.
Florian gave a white and even smile. A human rights lawyer with a particularly troubling record in opposing bioform and human limitation technology. The words came out very clinically, and she was proud of herself. Sometimes the words were difficult for her. Collaring, hierarchies, feedback. All the language of artificial neuroarchitecture that originated in bioform research but hadn't stayed there. All heavily restricted under WS laws that Thompson and his fellow lobbyists were trying to change. Florian's smile curdled a little.
She signed the NDA,
he said.
She is not permitted to say anything. She took the money, sir. That's a done deal right there. Mama Lassie has been compensated in full for...
And even he couldn't quite say it straight. There was enough human being left in Marco Florian that he couldn't just say, for us ruining her son. And Florian ruined people every day. It was what he did here. In the same way that his predecessors had ruined dog after dog until the first canine bioform had stepped off the production line. And wasn't that the point? The man would argue. Everyone valued what bioforms could bring to the world. And nobody sat around complaining about all the dogs that had suffered and died for them. Behind the guards and the chain-link fence of Braintree, Florian ruined humans so that he could gift the world something special. And he firmly believed that that end would justify all his means. Except Terence Lassie had ended up in Braintree too soon, while his appeal was still underway, thanks to some luckless and now jobless clerk's error. Terence Lassie had been acquitted, thanks to the unceasing work of his mother, who'd made herself quite the public figure in her drive to exonerate her son. And then, Terence Lassie hadn't been in any state to go back into public life when Ruth Ann Lassie turned up with the paperwork to claim him.
"We've had run-ins with Mr. Aslan before, sir,"
Florian said, trying for dismissive. Thompson just barked,
"Yeah?"
And Carol translated, "Surely that means he'll make a priority of this case."
"There's no case, Mr. Thompson, sir, none at all."
Florian made desperately conciliatory gestures.
"And Aslan's a spent force. Could have been a big shot, but got stuck doing charity cases. Our lawyers can beat their lawyers, sir. The moment there's a peep out of them, we'll slap them with that NDA's term so hard."
"She'll talk,"
Thompson spat.
"She doesn't know enough. And if she does, we'll destroy her. Ruin her. Non-disclosure, Mr. Thompson, sir. Take it from me. It's not a problem."
"We should have dealt with her."
Now Thompson's voice was lower, a rough growl, as introspective as he got. The focus of his ire hung up above them, where it might stoop on Carol as easily as Florian. "She was very high profile at the time, sir," she said quietly. "You thought that might backfire with worse publicity." Or at least the analyses had suggested that, and she'd fed the idea to him in small words, and he'd run with it.
"Not so high profile now,"
he said.
"Call people."
"I'll put a team on standby, sir," she confirmed, hoping that was all he meant. Hoping he wouldn't tear into her now, tell her to go send the trigger dogs.
"Do you want to see the latest version, sir?"
Florian asked quietly, sensing that his moment under the burning lens of Thompson's magnifying glass was over. Thompson's head swung round towards him with a grunt.
"Latest?" We've got a stable framework for you. I've a subject ready for demonstration, if you would like.
Florian made a little handshake gesture, weirdly ritual.
Want to play?
Thompson licked his lips.
Play. Sure. Show me.
And the storm was past, until the next time. And Carol would be keeping tabs on Ma Lassie and on Aslan Connor Laika. And she'd keep an open channel to Thompson and Braintree's legal teams and hope they wouldn't need the trigger dogs. They went underground for the next piece of theater, through three checkpoints and five locked doors. This was, as Florian always told them, where the magic happened. His step had its spring back, his voice cheery now Thompson wasn't glowering at him. Even Florian, Carol thought. Even he, the neurotech genius, the ruiner of human beings, was a slave to Thompson's moods and rages. He always knuckled under, always found some toy for his boss to play with to divert the anger. In the end, she knew, he would give Thompson the world on a plate. And by then, it wouldn't even be for money or for his career, but because doing what Thompson wanted became an end in itself. The man got into your head. Florian got into your head, too. One of the inmates had been brought out, sat in a room the other side of a metal table. He'd been frightened and angry at first, but then they'd activated his headwear and run the program, and he'd become quite the different man. Now Thompson was sitting there, talking to him, chuckling a little, a child with a new toy. Boya was in the corner of the room, ready to intervene if things went wrong. But they never went wrong. Florian knew his job. No one better. Carol got to watch from the other side of the room's mirror, where normally Florian's little white-coated minions would take notes. Some part of her could find what she was looking at fascinating. She'd known this was what Thompson was after, obviously. His long-term goal that he'd co-opted so many people to make real. A child's goal, really. A spoiled child's, even. Save that was the way Thompson was. A wizard, almost, who could drive a coach and horses through every convention of human society, bend the efforts of other more knowledgeable men to his desires, co-opt a parliament of talents to make the grand, simple, brutal, impossible dream happen. 100 experts who could do the things he could not, but could never think the way he did. Admirable, in a terrible way.
You enjoyed that, didn't you?
Florian at her elbow, close enough to touch. She went very still, staring down through the one-way mirror at her boss. The doctor inched closer, until the hairs on her neck prickled with his proximity, until her heart jagged in her ribcage. And still she kept her face impassive, just that polite small smile that she'd trained it to relax into.
Seeing him lay into me. Getting one up on me, Miss Springer, hmm?
Florian was slightly shorter than she was, and his face crept into the edge of her vision from the lower right, like the rise of a malign moon.
Are you feeling quite well within yourself, Miss Springer?
She forced herself to look at him, still keeping the doors shut between the way he made her feel and anything that showed on her face. Otherwise, she'd snap. Otherwise, she'd scream, strike out, run away. Perfectly well. Thank you, Dr. Florian. Get away. Get away from me, please. But he was still there, far too close, his breath on her throat, his eyes touching her bare skin like mosquitoes.
Yes, he said.
All those words condensed to that simple residue. And then, after a moment's scrutiny,
you do seem off kilter. I'm sorry to see that. You know how much I care about your well-being, and I know how important you are, too.
and a conspiratorial roll of his eyes behind the empty sockets of his spectacles, down towards Thompson. And then just that, "Yes," again. Afterwards, Thompson came out chortling and rubbing his hands. Florian endured his beaming, said yes, they were close to ready for the final stage of the project, whenever Thompson was ready to take that step. And they'd destroy the subject, of course, because until they were ready to go live, you really couldn't have that sort of evidence lying around the place. One more convict. One without a mom like Ruth Ann Lassie to even care about their well-being. One more poor boy lost to the system. One more corpse for the furnaces below Braintree, going to his doom, making demands and issuing orders. Incandescent that nobody cared.
"Good, great, good,"
Thompson said. Pupils still dilated by the power trip of it all, by the imagined goal grown that much closer.
"I thought you'd be pleased, sir. We really are on the very cusp, about to make scientific history."
And then, because Thompson didn't care about scientific history,
"And all for you, of course. All your idea. Your genius."
And if there wasn't an academic scale that would recognize Thompson as such, Carol still knew it was true. In some way they couldn't measure. Because of how he got what he wanted. How he made other people, even real geniuses like Florian, parts of his extended person. Organs of his body that could make the world the way he desired. And then Florian said,
"I think your assistant needs some calibration, Mr. Thompson, sir. I've been watching her, and I do want to check over her headwear. I know how much you rely on her."
"No, no." But Thompson just grunted and nodded. And if he wanted it, then she wanted it, because that was how things worked. And she went with Florian through to his own examination room that only he got to use. There were cameras in the corners, and the beds were of cold metal. Just chill slabs like the place was a morgue. No need for it, of course. Even a cheap doctor's room would have a thin mattress, a sheet. But Florian liked his brushed titanium, his surgical steel.
"You can put your clothes on the shelf there, Miss Springer,"
he told her. Smile as expensive as it was insincere. "It's just my headwear," she whispered. But he simply repeated the request. Same intonation, same smile.
"You know what your boss wants," he added. "He wants you to do what I say.
Because he needs me.
He needs you. And he needs me to make sure you're reliable. He does so rely on you. And so just strip off and get on the table there, won't you? So I can check out just what's going on in that pretty head."
And she did. Because she had to. And the metal was icy against her skin. Florian set up his machines and linked to her headwear, checking it all out, testing the limits placed on her. All those chains he'd built into her when Thompson had first brought her here. And she'd signed the NDA as well. She'd agreed to the waivers, all the legal fictions. And she hadn't known how it would be. She hadn't known. All she'd known was that the job was good. And the money was good. And they'd explained that she'd be handling very sensitive information for a very important man. And they needed someone who was loyal beyond any question. And didn't she want to be that person? And as his machines did their work, Florian prowled about the table and she felt his gaze on her. Not on her flesh, on her bared body, but on the points where she touched the metal, where her fragile substance was flattened against the unyielding mirror finish of the steel. She heard his breathing coarsen at the sight of it, at what got him going. Not the human, but where the human and the artificial met, the uncomfortable union of them. And in the end, everything in her head was perfectly fine, of course, working as intended. She was as loyal to Warner S. Thompson as she could possibly be, devoted to him, adored him with all her body. She'd take a bullet. She'd never betray him. Florian told her all this as she dressed, as she gave him her resting compliance face, as she twisted and raged inside. And she rolled her stockings back up and stepped out of his examination room as calmly as though she'd been visiting her accountant or her bank manager. Then they were back in the good doctor's office as the man reeled off the next stages of the plan, expansive in his self-congratulatory monologuing. Thompson just sat through it, and Carol made notes so she could render it down into the sort of information the man could take in and make use of.
"He'll get his."
She held herself very still. She was good at that. Florian was still in full flow, Thompson starting to fidget. The voice was in her ear, a buzzing whisper. Boya was looming behind her, eyes fixed on the loquacious doctor. His long muzzle was shut, the voice coming from his throat. Because, of course, dog lips and tongues weren't so good for human words. Boyo didn't talk. Oh, she'd known he could. Almost all bioforms could. But Thompson didn't like his things to talk. She'd never heard it before. And the voice was so soft, to come from so huge a creature. Soft and thoughtful and sympathetic.
"The doctor. He'll get his,"
Boyo murmured.
"How much he knows, he won't last. So clever, and he can't see it. Soon, when he's given what he can, it'll be his turn. He's not loyal like us. Nobody is. And he upset you. I will do it. Master will send me. I will make the doctor go away for Master. But I will do it for you, too. I am sorry he makes you unhappy."
All for her ears only. And it had been a long time since she'd had anything just to herself. Everything else she shared with Thompson. But now she had these words from the bioform bodyguard. Because although he was forbidden to speak, perhaps he'd decided that speaking to her didn't count. They were both organs of Warner S. Thompson, their lives inextricably shackled to his. They were his inner court, the only ones he could trust. And she kept her face very still and didn't show anything on it except that slight smile Thompson liked. But she touched Boyo's arm. Very briefly, very lightly, to show she understood.